Welcome back to Monday's Topical Currents. I'm Bonnie Berman. Joseph Cooper recovering from his back surgery, and he's improving rapidly and planning his return to WLRN. Don't know when it'll be, but it is in the planning stages, so that's great news. So today we thought we'd discuss the races and the issues at stake in more detail for tomorrow's primary election so we can make more informed decisions tomorrow. Helping us to do so in the studio is Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist Elaine Devaye, a.k.a. Ladre. Did I say that right?
Ladra.
Ladra. Okay. Ladra. She publishes the online blog Political Cortadito, and we welcome her back to Topical Currents. Good afternoon, Elaine.
Thank you for having me, Bonnie.
Thanks for being here. Also returning to Topical Currents, award-winning investigative reporter Dan Christensen. He's the founder and editor of the Broward Bulldog. Welcome back, Dan.
Hi, Bonnie.
And joining us from Palm Beach County by phone, we welcome veteran Palm Beach Post political reporter and columnist George Bennett. Welcome to you, George.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Thanks for joining us. So let's just begin with each of you saying if you know how the early voting turnout was and absentee ballot submissions. Any numbers there, Elaine?
Yeah. In Dade County, we were looking at more than 80,000 absentee ballots as of Friday. I haven't gotten the total count today. But if you include the early votes, we'd probably be looking at 100,000 between absentee ballots and early voting. Still, absentee ballots are going to outnumber both early voting and in-person voting, and I would imagine even the sum of the two, which has always been a concern in Miami-Dade, where absentee ballots have been manipulated. I mean, in 2012, mm-hmm. we had several investigations after several what we call boletines, or absentee ballot brokers were caught red-handed delivering or picking up absentee ballots. And we have had many races, including the property appraisers race in 2012, were decided by absentee ballots rather than by any of the other, you know, early voting or election day. So it's something I'm keeping a close eye on, and I'm sure others are as well. I know that there's been a task force. The state attorney's task force has been out there looking for activity. The Miami-Dade Police Department, working with the FDLE, has been out there looking for activity, particularly in hot pockets like Sweetwater and Hialeah.
You mean just to make sure there's no fraud going on?
Just to make sure that there's nothing going on. Okay. And I also know that there's a couple of candidates who have private investigators also watching the known boleteros. And up to now, there has not been a lot of the same activity that we've seen in the past. So that's a good sign.
Well, does it come out at this point or doesn't it come out after, usually?
Well, it comes out after, but you see it now.
See it?
I mean,
okay.
it would have happened the first week when absentee ballots drop. That's when the real activity takes place. And so it's either a good sign because there's not activity because of all the investigations and the $10,000 reward offered by the PBA has maybe chilled the situation a little bit, but it could also mean that they've changed their tactics. So we don't know.
Okay. Any early numbers for you, Dan?
I don't have any early numbers. I've simply heard that it's fairly light. What
Which
the numbers
is, okay.
are, I hadn't checked.
And George, anything in Palm Beach County yet?
I'm waiting to get the latest on absentee ballots. Early voting ended yesterday. They had about 15,000, almost 16,000 early voters, which is a little more than they've had the last time there was a non-presidential primary. So I'm not sure how much to read into that, but that's the number I have up from up here.
Well, what do each of you predict for voter turnout generally, I mean, for this whole election?
Well, people have been saying that it's light, but I think they're comparing it to 2012 when we had, you know, huge lines and a barrage
right.
of voters. I think it's in line with the 2010 primary numbers, at least that I've seen in Miami-Dade. We're pretty much keeping the same pace, and it depends on early voting. Now, I've heard that there's a tropical storm in the area, and we may get some rain tomorrow,
yeah.
which will definitely affect the turnout.
Right.
But if we keep the pace that we've been keeping now, I think we're going to be pretty much at the same, 15% turnout that we had in the 2010, which is low, but that's what we had in the 2010 primary as well.
And Broward, Dan?
Yeah, I would expect a similar turnout there percentage-wise, but it could be on the light side depending upon the weather. And the focus still is, even though there's a lot of races, that important local races that need to be decided, the focus is still clearly on November.
Right. And George, you say that the absentee ballots, there were more than, or early voting, there were more than there were in the last non-presidential election.
Right. A little more than 4 years ago for the midterm. But I think, you know, I think the midterm 4 years ago, the primary drew less than 20% turnout, and I wouldn't expect it to be. There hadn't been a ton of excitement here for the primary.
Okay, well, before we get to all the local stuff, I thought each of you, if you'd weigh in on the gubernatorial race, beginning with, of course, the Democratic candidates. How is Nan Rich doing locally and statewide at this point against Charlie Crist? Any idea?
She appears to be a blip from everything that I can tell. Crist seems to have a lock. I think that's one of the reasons people are looking forward,
right,
trying to or anticipating the showdown between the current governor and the former governor.
And I think also that's why you see, I think there's a lower turnout in Miami-Dade among Democrats voters than there are among Republican voters. At least that's certainly been, you know, the trend in some of the races that I've been watching. And I think it's because there's not that much interest. People just are taking Charlie Crist as a given. And so they're not, you know, going out to vote either way. But I also believe she's a blip. And I believe that's a shame because I think she would have been a very good candidate.
Yeah, I mean, I received something from somebody who's very, very politically active saying that, you know, really we should get out. She's the real deal.
Right.
And although she hasn't raised much money, that if she does get the nomination, the money will follow. And
well, the funny thing is that on the street, when you talk to the active Democrats, they like Nan Rich much more, not just a little bit more, a lot more. But I think that their fear, and I don't know where this comes from. Again, it's the perception, the message that gets out that, you know, she's not going to get the backing, you know, which I think is ridiculous. I think whoever wins the primary is going to
get
tons of backing, you know, not just from the local Democrats, but at, you know, the DCCC level and the national level, all the people who weigh in. This is a very important governor's race, and you're going to see that it becomes a national battle, well, more than just a state battle.
There's a bit of irony here because 4 years ago, nobody knew who Rex Scott was. However, he had $70 million or so to pump into his own campaign. She doesn't have that.
Right.
And, you know, I think what the realistic feeling here is that she is going to be simply unable to get well known enough to make a statewide race in this period of time.
Sort of like Alex Sink. Not
Sink, at least people had heard of Alex Sink before, and her name was out here and over on the West Coast and larger voting areas. But Nan Rich really isn't known much outside of Broward County.
George?
And, well, you know, the other thing is, I mean, I think a lot of even the kind of liberal base voters who come out in Democratic primary, I know in talking to some of them, I've been surprised at, maybe not surprised, but I mean, a lot of them have kind of made the calculation that Crist is the best guy to beat Rick Scott. And so even like State Senator Jeff Clemens up here, who's a pretty liberal senator and would seem to be, if you know, of any elected official, a Nan Rich backer, you know, a couple weeks ago said, I love Nan Rich and her politics, but, you know, I think Charlie's the guy. You know, I throughout this campaign, I've kind of in Palm Beach County and just in statewide things, I've been a little surprised at how little resistance there's been to Crist. I mean, I thought, you know, some of the progressives would at least, you know, give him a harder time in the early stages of the primary. But so far, I haven't really seen it.
Well, and I think that that's also I think that there's. That's part of the reason why Annette Tadeo, the chairwoman of the Miami-Dade Democratic Party, was tapped to be his running mate.
You think that was a good move?
I think that was a good move on Crist. I mean, even before that, and I quoted her in my blog, Annette Tadeo was quoted a few weeks earlier to being tapped as number two, as saying that we still have to wait for the primary. We don't know how Nan Rich is going to do. I mean, she was not being, you know, she was not all sold on Charlie Crist. I think that by tapping her, not only did they, you know, chill that, but also the progressive Democrats who she had been able to light a fire under, she kind of brings them with her. So,
well, we're going to get and what about just before we go to break? Has Rick Scott lost any ground or support from the Republican Party, or is he in good shape?
As far as I know, he's in good shape with the Republican Party.
Yeah, I think so, too. I mean, there might be a few Republicans who individually don't
dislike
him, but the Republican Party itself is
behind him.
Yeah, there could be some lack of enthusiasm for him because
right.
of his various recent troubles. But right. I think that the party is I've got no indication that he's being abandoned in any significant way.
The party's spending a lot of money on him. I mean, it would be interesting for both Scott and Chris is, you know, what's the lowest percentage that they can win with I mean, you know, Chris needs to not only win, but you would expect him to get north of 60% for it to be, you know, otherwise people are going to really question his candidacy. And Rick Scott, you know, I don't know. I mean, the two candidates he's running against are complete political unknown. So, you know, I suppose there'll be some anti-Scott vote in the primary, but, you know, at what level will that be? That's kind of one of the interesting things to watch and Tuesday's results.
And what about finances? I mean, speaking of November, can Chris match Scott in money to spend?
Well, it won't just be Chris. And I don't think that Chris can match Scott in his own money or in his own campaign. But remember, like I said, this is going to be a national war. And so we're going to have, you know, not just Scott's money, but on his side, you're going to have, you know, the National Republican Party, you're going to have the Koch brothers, you're going to have, you know, the Chambers of Commerce. And then I would imagine that on Chris's side, you're going to have America Rising, you're going to have the DCCC, you're going to have other organizations and super PACs also. I mean, this is one of those governor's races that they see as possibly flippable. And so, you know, the Democrats are going to pour money into this on a national level. So I think he's going to be competitive. Now, whether he can, you know, raise as much money as Scott will have, I don't think anybody in the world can raise as much money as Scott will have.
We're speaking with Elaine DeValle from the Political Cortadito. It's an online blog. Dan Christensen of the Broward Bulldog and George Bennett from the Palm Beach Post. And we're going to get to local issues and races when we get back on today's Topical Currents. Welcome back to Monday's Topical Currents. Bonnie Berman visiting with our panel of political experts. Elaine DeValle from the Political Cortadito, Dan Christensen, founder and editor of Broward Bulldog, and George Bennett is a staff reporter and columnist for the Palm Beach Post. And if you have a question for anybody in on the panel today on the primary election or other political issues that may concern you, if you voted already, if you want to weigh in, do you plan on voting in this election? Why or why not? Call us 1-800-743-9576, 1-800-743-9576. You can email radio@WLRN.org or tweet us at Topical Currents. Okay, so Elaine DeValle, let's talk about the GOP congressional seat in District 26. That looks like it's pretty involved.
Yeah, that's been a pretty interesting race. I think probably the most interesting race in Miami-Dade for this primary. We're looking at five Republican candidates. One of them is the former congressman, David Rivera, who came in at the very end on the 11th hour and hasn't really campaigned much. And funny enough, I'm not sure he's going to be a factor in this election. You know, we have the front runner or the chosen one of the GOP establishment and the celebrity endorsements is the Miami-Dade School Board member, Carlos Curbelo. There's also Cutler Bay Mayor Ed McDougall, former Commissioner Joe Martinez, and a constitutional attorney, Lorenzo Larry Palomares Starbuck, who used to be just Lorenzo Palomares up until he started to run for office, and then he anglicized his name, which is something that's very common and it happens here all the time. People anglicize their name, or if they're Anglo, they Hispanicize their name so that they can appeal to a wider array of voters. But I think really, after covering this primary for the last 9 months, almost like a pregnancy, huh? It looks to me like it's going to be a race between Carlos Curbelo and Ed McDougall. They're the only ones who've really been campaigning hard, have done a lot of ad buys, have been doing a lot of canvassing from the beginning. I have not seen a lot of campaigning being done either by Mr. Palomares or by Mr. Corbello or by former Congressman Rivera, who sometimes he's campaigning, sometimes he's not. So we're not even sure if he's got one foot in and one foot out. So I think that's going to affect him at the polls.
And you mean that was before him being named as that co-conspirator in the case involving the illegal campaign contributions?
Even before, because that happened when that happened Friday, Thursday, and the week before that, it was just co-conspirator A, but everybody knew that it was him. And a couple of weeks before that, when he first ran, it's really funny when David Rivera's not running for office, he's not in the news. When he's running for office, suddenly he's in the headlines and there's news stories about him every week or every 10 days. I do think that even before that happened, there was some reluctance among Republicans because they just don't feel, and this is the main thing, they don't feel that if he's elected now, he has the best chance to beat Joe Garcia in November.
Right.
They feel that he would be defeated again because, in part, of all of these headlines and investigations and news stories. So really right now they're looking at choosing the best person to go up against Joe Garcia in November. That's going to be another one of those national war races where we're going to have, parties from outside pouring money into it. So that's going to become a very important race also on a national level. It's going to be watched. So,
okay, Dan, what's the most interesting race in Broward that you're watching?
Well, there's several on the congressional level. I mean, this one I don't think is all that interesting, but the Republican primary going against Debbie Wasserman Schultz, it would seem that that whoever wins that is swimming very heavily upstream because mm-hmm. it's a strong Democratic district. But there are several interesting races. I don't know. I guess some of my favorites are judicial races. Because of some of the advertising that's come out, we have a guy named his name is escaping me for the moment.
Is that the one?
Steve Farron.
Yes,
I know his name well.
Okay,
I've dealt with him in the past when he was Sunrise mayor. Anyway, he's running against a guy named John Contini, who's a fairly well-known lawyer in town, and they both want to be judges. Farron is the incumbent, but he's had an interesting past, which I would sort of characterize it as ethically challenged. When, among other things, he voted to hire his campaign treasurer, a city attorney, without taking any bids from anybody else. That was 4, 5, 6 years ago mm-hmm. now. And he got elected despite that and some other stuff. But anyway, he's put out some interesting ads, and they're in his name, so it's not some committee that did it. The first is, we learn about him, is that, and this is, I'll just read directly from the ad, it says that he knows that a courtroom can be a very scary place, especially to a child. That's why he started giving children in his court teddy bears or other toys to help them feel more at ease. So he's got a picture of a teddy bear on the front of his ad here, and a second picture of a little girl hugging a teddy bear. And then on another, that's
almost as good as a picture of a puppy.
Yeah, it's got,
yes.
Oh, well, we got a lot of
or
other
a kitty.
We got a lot of puppies and other ones. No kitties. I haven't seen one cat.
No, dogs are good.
Just dogs, okay.
Yes.
We do
right.
have a lot of that, but we also have this one, which is sort of a little different tone that was put out by Judge Farron, tacking Mr. Contini, in which he makes a number of claims about him, that my friend and associate Buddy Nevins, who used to be a political reporter for the Sun Sentinel, runs BrowardBeat.com, put out a piece yesterday about it in which he talked about how virtually everything in this ad is a misrepresentation of Mr. Contini's past. So it's kind of interesting. On one hand, he wants to be warm and fuzzy, and on the other hand, he's into this nasty political negative stuff, of which there is quite a bit. And there's only a couple campaigns I've seen where I at least have not seen real negative advertising in this. It seems like, I think it's happened. It's been for the last few things, but I'm wondering at what point the voters are going to start holding it against the candidate because of the negative advertising.
Wasn't that an issue? Hasn't that been an issue repeatedly? I mean, this negative campaigning, it's an issue with voters, but then it's still, they're still doing it.
Yeah,
I think
it obviously works if they keep doing it.
Right? I think it works, and I think it's actually, you know, I've come around. I've come to the point where I think it's legitimate because it's not necessarily negative, and I don't know about that, but in the advertising that are called negative or attack advertisements that I've come across in Miami-Dade, what it is, it's pointing things out about the opponent that I think in some cases need to be known. You know, in the commission race, for example, where the incumbent commissioner Linda Bell is running against the challenger Daniela Levine Cava, that has been nothing but attacks versus attacks. They've just attacked each other, which isn't necessarily good because you need to know a little bit about the good of
right.
people. But, you know, I think it does work, and I think that we could say all we want that, you know, we don't like it, but it's just like we don't like, you know, to watch, you know, reality TV. It's super successful. So obviously we do like it. We do like to see what's negative about candidates.
George Bennett, tell us a little bit about what's going on. Like, what's your big story up in Palm Beach?
Probably the most significant primary here is the there's a 6 Republican congressional primary for the seat that's held by Democratic Congressman Patrick Murphy. So the winner of that Republican primary in northern Palm Beach County and the Treasure Coast will face Murphy. Murphy's the Democrat who beat Alan West 2 years ago in the most expensive House race in America. And that district has a slight Republican lean to it. So, you know, as soon as Murphy beat West, he became a national target for the GOP. But then over the last year and a half, the race hasn't really played out the way Republicans wanted. Some of the kind of A-list recruits that they tried to get passed up the race, State Senator Joe Negron and former State House Majority Leader Adam Hasner had – you know, the National Republican Congressional Committee wanted them to run. Neither of them did. The candidates that are left have had trouble raising money. And so, you know, the winner of this race will be an underdog against Murphy, even though it's, you know, kind of a slight Republican-leaning district. But just given the nature of the district and it being a midterm election year, whoever wins is still, you know, is still going to be a competitive race in November. So that's one to watch. Carl Domino, the former state house member, is, you know, considered the front runner there, but with a 6 candidate low budget race, you know, that's almost anything could happen. Another race, you know, Dan was mentioning some of the judicial races in Broward, which are just always crazy because judicial candidates aren't really allowed to talk about any issues or anything. And there's 2 in Palm Beach County. There's one, incumbent circuit judge Diana Lewis is being challenged by Jessica Tickton, who she's with that Tickton law firm that advertises on TV a lot. And I think in Palm Beach County, only 2 incumbent judges have been defeated in the last 30 years. But Tickton is trying to do that. And then there's another race with 3 candidates running for an open judicial seat. And one of them, Jamie Goodman, this is his 3rd straight election that he's run for judge, and he spent something close to $600,000 of his own money so far trying to get elected. And he is, you know, kind of has the financial advantage, at least in this race, tomorrow. And then the other interesting one, there's a school board race where a former porn star is running against an incumbent. So
wow.
I don't think he's going to win, but, you know, that's...
And
who
is
Palm Beach County.
Who is the former porn star?
The former porn star is a guy named David Mech, M-E-C-H. And I forget what his – that wasn't his
– not his stage name.
Not his stage name, right?
Yeah, so and, you know, sometimes candidates will get their nickname on the ballot, but he did not do that here, so.
Big mistake. I say that's a big
right,
mistake.
Right, so, I mean, whatever, you know, porn fans in Palm Beach County won't be able to – recognize him, but so, you know, that, I mean, he's running against an incumbent, Karen Brill, who I think there was a soundbite to her earlier on the show. You know, I think she's in good shape. And then there's another challenger in that race as well.
All right. Go ahead.
So those are some of the interesting races up here.
Well, you have some more interesting ones we're going to get to, but we need to take a break on today's topical currents. We're speaking, that was the voice of George Bennett, veteran staff reporter and columnist for the Palm Beach Post, but with Dan Christensen from the Broward Bulldog and Alain DeValle from Political Cortadito. And we're going to take your calls when we return. So stay with us. Welcome back to Monday's Topical Currents. Bonnie Berman with Alain DeValle from the Political Cortadito, Dan Christensen, Broward Bulldog, and George Bennett from the Palm Beach Post. Let's take a few calls, and then we'll get back to some more of the local races going on. We are going to talk to Eileen in Miami, who has a pretty simple question. Hi, Eileen.
Hi. I was wondering, I'm registered as an independent in Miami. Can I vote in the primary?
You can vote in the primary in the judicial races, also the county commission races, the school board races, the Miami-Dade property appraisers race, all the nonpartisan races. You won't be able to vote in the Republican primary or in either of the primaries for the governor's nominations. But you can vote. Your ballot will tell you what you know. They will give you a ballot that's made for you, and you'll be able to vote in the races that you can vote. But please do go vote. The judicial races are important, the county commission, the school board race, and the Miami-Dade property appraisers race, which hasn't gotten a lot of attention, is also an important race. So those votes do count.
Okay. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Eileen. And let's go to, thank you, to Ignacio in unincorporated Dade. Hi, Ignacio.
Yeah, hi. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Fine. I have a question and a comment. I'll just go for the question first. I live in an unincorporated Dade County, but if that huge observation tower gets approved by the citizens of Miami, it can be an eyesore that we all will be looking at, regardless of where we live. I didn't like the way that the city of Miami stacked the ballot by lumping it with the renegotiation of the Bayside contract.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a bad thing. But my point is, what recourse do we, the rest of the people in the county, which are the majority of the people who are going to stuck looking at that thing, what recourse will we have after the vote? That is the question.
I wish I had an answer. I don't know. I mean, I don't know what the legal recourse is, but I do agree with you that this was stacked intentionally. I don't think that the $400 million observation tower that looks like a toenail clipper on all of the designs.
I can think of something more profane.
Yes, I'm sure you can. But I don't think that that would have passed if it had been a standalone issue. And then by them putting it with the Bayside Marketplace extension, I think that was tricky. I think that was not...
Dishonest is the word.
Yeah, but I don't know what kind of recourse you would have, especially if you don't live in the city of Miami. Perhaps people in the city of Miami would have some kind of recourse. If it does pass, and I do think it will, because I don't think that the majority of voters are sophisticated enough to understand what a stacked ballot or a stacked question is, and the fact that, this is kind of pulling the wool over their eyes in a way.
Totally. Totally. I hope we can do something some way.
I'll tell you
afterwards.
What, I'll look into it. And if I find that there's something that I live in unincorporated in the UMSA area as well. If I find that there's something that we can do, I'll write about it and let people know.
Please do. I admire your writing, by the way. Okay. Second, the observation. I got a flyer just on Friday, I think it was, from Rainier Diaz de la Portilla, who is running in a judicial race. And my reaction to the flyer immediately was, can't this guy get a job? He seems to have run for just about every political office, a lower-level political office that I can think of. It's part of the bad effects of term limits, but I think has been state senator, state representative. I think he's been on the school board. It seems to be the family business to run for office.
Elaine,
That's one way of looking at it. I mean, he never served as state senator. He was a state rep. He also served as a school board member. He ran again for state office in 2012 and lost. But he hasn't run again and lost after that. So, I mean, I do think that the family is called towards public service. I think that it's been a long history with them. I think that Rainier, as an attorney and as a mediator, has long looked at. In fact, I talked to him in 2012 about this when he was running for state rep. One of the things that his friends had mentioned was that he should run for judge, that he would make a good judge because he was a good mediator and he was a good attorney. This is an open seat, and I would normally think that he was not the best candidate, but he's running against a woman who is she's on leave as assistant city attorney in the city of Miami. She's been investigated twice for ethical issues, for taking VIP tickets to the Ultra Music Festival while she was negotiating the agreement with the city, which many argue is not the best agreement for the city. She was also investigated for steering thousands of dollars of business towards her boyfriend's legal firm with real estate transactions that the city was taking. And that was an investigation that was done by the Miami-Dade Commission on Ethics. A lot of people have been looking at this race as the best of two evils. Unfortunately, that's what we've got in a lot of races these days. But I'm not so sure that you can equate a judicial seat to a state rep seat or a school board seat, because it's not like he's going to have the same type of political power or political strings, if you will. So I do think the family is called by public service, and I think that, that's why he's running for judge.
Thanks, Ignacio, for calling. Okay, Dan, let's do more races in Broward. Go ahead.
All right, well, let's do county commission, because we have another interesting
advertisement. That's the Barbara Sharif.
Well, there's that one. That's a pretty nasty one. That's in District 8. She's going against Alexandra Davis in the Democratic primary here. It's very bitter. Not the only one that's bitter, but a key one. Davis is being supported by Mayor Sharif's colleague on the county commission, Dale Holness, Commissioner Dale Holness here, who doesn't seem to think that Sharif supports him enough, apparently. And the Sun Sentinel reported that Sharif and Davis can't even stand to be in the same room together, which is pretty bad. Sharif has claimed recently that a gun was pulled in her presence during a dispute with a brother-in-law of a state representative, Daphne Campbell, who's a Democrat out of Miami, during a dispute about an endorsement in the race. So it's like, huh? What's going on? It's very, very strange.
George?
One note on that race that kind of bleeds into Palm Beach County. Sharif recently endorsed one of the challengers to Alcee Hastings in the Democratic congressional primary, Jameel McCline, the former heavyweight boxer. And she said that part of the reason she did that was because Hastings' campaign, I guess, had given $1,000 to Sharif's challenger back in January. So there's a little bit of spillover into the congressional primary with that one.
Huh.
No fair. You have a former heavyweight boxer.
I was just
going to
say, Elaine.
You have
like
a porn star and a former heavyweight
right.
boxer.
I know. I wanted to mention that. I mean,
no
it's,
fair.
It's both a Broward and a Palm Beach race where Alcee Hastings is running. And, I mean, he's a heavy favorite, but he is being challenged by a former heavyweight boxer, Jameel McCline, and by a Port of Palm Beach commissioner, Gene Enright, in the primary. And it's really the first time Hastings has had to work for his reelection since he got in office 22 years ago. So it's an interesting race.
George, one other question for emailer. Annie says she was surprised you didn't mention Peggy Lynn Rowe. She's running for judge but made a real misjudgment by signing a document pledged re-abortion, now retracted. Are you familiar with that?
Yeah, I did. She's in the race. I mentioned there's an open judicial seat. One of the candidates, Jamie Goodman, who is running for the third time, and he spent about $600,000 of his own money over the three elections, And then his opponents, one of them is Peggy Rowe Lynn, who signed a pledge, a pro-life group called, I think, Florida Personhood PAC or something like that. And she signed a, I think it was called a personhood affirmation or something like that, and got a lot of heat for it because judicial candidates are not supposed to make anything, any kind of a promise or pledge to any group. And then she retracted it a couple days later. You have, you know, A, just with judicial candidates, anything that, you know, is even remotely like a pledge or a promise, they're not supposed to do. But then also just mm-hmm. politically, I mean, Palm Beach County is a pretty Democratic county, and while a judicial race is nonpartisan, you know, coming out as being a pro-lifer, you know, probably doesn't help her in the primary.
Dan?
Back in Broward, we have one other interesting judicial race. It isn't quite as George describes, but we have one candidate, Lynn Rosenthal, who got arrested not too long ago. She pled out recently to a reduced charge. She'd been arrested on DUI when she came to the courthouse, apparently impaired, and hit a BSO patrol car. She was, you know, coming in for the morning. And she has admitted to what she called an involuntary overdose of Ambien. She's denied drinking, apparently. But this was the night before, and she's blamed her doctor for over-prescribing her. So her DUI was pleaded down this month to a misdemeanor of reckless driving. She got 3 months of probation, 25 hours of community service. And but she got her picture on her opponent's. She's being led away in handcuffs on this picture for her opponent's, a guy named Franz. His nickname apparently is Jara McLawrence. And he's running against her. And it's not often that you get to have a picture of your opponent in handcuffs on your
full perp walk
card. Yeah, it's great.
Wow.
And
talk
but
about
now on the
other gold.
Yeah. Well, we got on the other side though. We've got Judge Rosenthal's. It's a retain her for judge. She's got dogs with her on the picture,
and babies.
And you're looking here, but I don't see any mention of her arrest in here. I looked through it, but it talks about how she's been a prosecutor and she's been fair and diligent and compassionate. But there's not a word in here about the fact that she just pleaded out to a misdemeanor of reckless driving that had been worked down from a DUI.
And no statement from her doctor about the overdose of...
No. And she's like candidate McLawrence here has a statement in here, has a headline from the New York Times because they had written after she got, I think it was after she got busted. It might have been after another one got busted, another judge. Third county judge in 6 months to be arrested. So Broward's got an interesting distinction in that regard lately.
Mm. Okay, we're going to get back to more on today's Topical Currents with Elaine DeValle, George Bennett, and Dan Christensen, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to today's Topical Currents. We are talking about tomorrow's primary election with George Bennett from the Palm Beach Post, Dan Christensen from the Broward Bulldog, and Elaine DeValle from Political Corte Dito. And we're going to take a call in a minute from Stephen. Before we do, would you all give your websites and your contact information?
Oh, yeah, sure. Political Cortadito is at politicalcortadito.com. And you can also reach me at my email, which is edevalle@gmail.com.
Yeah, Broward Bulldog, www.browardbulldog.org. We're a 501c3 organization, and we'll be celebrating our fifth anniversary in a couple of months.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
And George?
Sure, I've got a couple. The Palm Beach Post website is www.pbpost.com. There's also our politics blog, which is postonpolitics.com. And you can follow me on Twitter at G Bennett, B-E-N-N-E-T-T, G Bennett Post on Twitter.
Okay, now let's talk to Stephen in Homestead, who's been very patient. Hi, Stephen. Welcome.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. I'm also a big fan of each and every one of your works. I do appreciate all the insight that y'all give. I just wanted to give my two cents on two races, the District 26 race here in South Florida, and the County Commission race for Linda Bell and Levine Cava.
My two favorite races.
Yes, the funnest races. First of all, the commission race is very ugly. I live in the district, and right here in Homestead, it just comes down. I have Linda Bell as the hometown girl, she's called. I believe in her. I voted for her. And but I got the chance to meet Levine Cava. She's got the police and other public unions backing her. But we'll see how that goes on that one. I just don't like the mailers that they keep sending out from the associated groups. And then for District 26, it's definitely between Carlos Curbelo and Ed McDougal. But we'll see how the it goes back to the Latino vote. See how closely split that will be between Curbelo Martinez and Rivera, and as well Palomata Starbuck. But I believe it'll either come down to Curbelo or McDougal.
Steve, you're a very sophisticated voter because you just touched upon the one thing that will make this race, and that's the Hispanic vote and how that's split up. If it's split up evenly between the Hispanic candidates, then McDougal has a clear path to victory. If one of the Hispanic candidates takes a majority of the Hispanic vote, let's say 50% or more of the Hispanic vote, then it'll be much more difficult for McDougal to come out of the primary as the winner. So you hit it on the nose. And yeah, the Levine Cava Linda Bell campaign or contest has been one of the ugliest I've seen. And I've been covering county politics for almost 20 years. It's one of the ugliest local races I've seen as far as attacks are concerned. It's nothing but attacks. Nobody has talked about anything except attacking the other candidate. So.
And I do appreciate your work, madam. You're the best. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks so much, Stephen.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Okay, Dan.
Back to Broward. All right. There's a couple of interesting county commission races other than Barbara Sharif. Ken Keechel is former commissioner who was defeated by Chip LaMarca 4 years ago. He's back. He tried to get it a couple of years ago running for a different district. He lost that. Now he's back running against, in the Democratic primary here, a guy named Ben Lapp, who's a fundraiser for the county and who's apparently spending solidly here. And the winner will face LaMarca again. The district has changed a lot, though, and LaMarca could be in trouble. So whoever wins this would have, seems to me, would have a good chance. And Keechel, it's interesting to know, seems to have indicated that he has Bobby Kennedy's endorsement because he's got Bobby's picture on his one of his flyers that he's sending out. And I mean, we all know that Bobby's been dead almost 50 years, so I don't know. But I guess the thing that really strikes me about that is that they talk about results, right? And the very first thing that Mr. Keechel lists is that he's never raised taxes as a county commissioner in the past. Somehow I don't see that as an accomplishment that you would list. It's just like, okay, so you didn't raise taxes. That's fine. But what did you actually do? What did you do? And there's very little of that in his campaign material.
It's very little of that in a lot of races.
Yes, no, that's true.
It's, and what they've done.
It's been a lot about the attacks and the endorsements. You know, you just mentioned Bobby Kennedy as a virtual endorsement just by sight of his photograph on the mailer. But we've had several races where we've had fake endorsements. People who said, you know, who've claimed that they've had somebody endorsed. One of the judicial candidates, the one who's running against Renier Diaz Labordia, Veronica Diaz, claimed to have Tomas Regalado's endorsement, the mayor of Miami. He told me that he did not. She put it on her Facebook page and on Instagram and everything. And he told me directly that he did not endorse her, that he was not getting involved in the race. In Lorenzo Palomares, one of the candidates in the GOP primary in District 26, has two endorsements that are fake endorsements where the politicians told me they were not endorsing him. We have Daphne Campbell saying that she did not endorse Sharif. So, this has been, I think, a year where we've seen a lot of empty endorsements and a lot of fake or bogus endorsements as well.
And how did
part of it, though, in politics, I mean, it's kind of like it depends on what the meaning of the word is. I mean, only in politics. Yeah, I was at a Charlie Crist event a couple weeks ago, and there was a local elected official there who spoke, stood with him, and I said, "Oh, are you endorsing Charlie Crist?" And she said, "I'm not endorsing him, but I'm supporting him." And, you know, to politicians, there is a fine line, and you know, the endorsing, and it, you know, technically means filling out a thing and signing it for a candidate. But, you know, I don't think to the average person it's I don't know that there's a difference. But I know I've experienced over the years times where people are supporting someone but say they're not endorsing them.
Right.
But,
Well, on the other hand, I got to give Keechel, he's got the sheriff's endorsement. Right here, he's got a picture of him shaking the sheriff's hand, and the sheriff. And then on the back, he's got this picture of him. On one side, he's smiling. The other side, he's got this tough look, and he says how he's going to fight hard to get law enforcement the resources it needs to protect our citizens. So there you have it with Ken Keechel.
I love those flyers. I'm glad you brought them in. It's kind of like show and tell.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, George, just one more thing. The race to challenge Lois Frankel. Just tell us about that one.
Sure. There's three Republicans running, and that's a Palm Beach and Broward County seat, District 22. It's a pretty heavily Democratic seat, and the winner of the Republican primary will be an underdog. But there's Andrea Lee McGee from Broward County, and then two Palm Beach County candidates, Paul Spain and David Wagey. And I'm not even sure how to call. I mean, financially, you know, Spain has been raised most money or put in a lot of his own money. But that's a district, you know, where Frankel will be the heavy favorite against whoever wins.
Okay, we have about 30 seconds. Then I want you to tell everybody to go vote if you would like to do so. But, Elaine, what's going on with the recall of Mayor Jimenez?
Oh, that hasn't even begun yet. The person who's in charge of that, Captain Jack Garcia, lost his son in a tragic accident on the 4th of July. And whether or not the fireboat, having a fireboat in service, would have made a difference in that case, no one can argue that having a fireboat in service is a bad thing. So he's taken on, you know, he's kind of pouring his efforts, you know, his emotions through this effort to recall Mayor Jimenez. But it's more than just about the fireboat. It's about the libraries, and it's about the, you know, laying off police officers while you give millions of dollars to, you know, Carnival Cruise Lines as a marketing incentive, or to the Miami Dolphins. You know, a lot of people are concerned about Mayor Jimenez's priorities and the way that he is giving millions to what they call his friends and family plan while taking away services from residents. That's going to start taking petitions in October. So certainly by the time that voters hit their polling places or their voting places in November or in October for early voting, there will be petition gatherers there taking signatures.
Okay, well, final words, Elaine DeValle from PoliticalCortadito.com.
Correct.
We thank you so much for joining us today. Dan Christensen, founder and editor of Broward Bulldog. It's browardbulldog.org.
We're on Facebook, too.
Okay.
And Twitter.
And George Bennett from the Palm Beach Post. He's a staff reporter, veteran staff reporter and columnist for the Palm Beach Post. And your website?
PBPost.com.
All right. Well, we want to thank all of you for joining us today.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you very much for
being
here. Thank you.
And
thank you for spending your time with us as well. Our producer is Richard Ives, with technical direction from our online producer, Paul Leary. We have free audio archives and downloads at our website, WLRN.org. And more information, links, and photos at the Topical Currents Facebook page. That's facebook.com/topicalcurrents. Tomorrow's Topical Currents considers how the obesity epidemic is affecting and threatening the lives of those affected. We visit with senior health policy correspondent with Kaiser Health News, Sarah Varney. She's written XL Love, How the Obesity Crisis is Complicating America's Love Life. Bonnie Berman, hoping your day is a great one. Stay tuned for Here and Now, up next from NPR News.